One, two, three.
This is where we walk in.
See, by now you got a feeling.
All you want is an opportunity to win, to compete, to dominate. And darn it, I'm going to give you that one.
If we know the series like we think we do, at least the original series, there absolutely is a sense that I called it a preamble to the end. So episode 6 will not begin the push to the end or the push to the climax. But I do think, as you mentioned off air, that the next episode very much feels like the episode before the penultimate, you know, something that builds so that when we're done with the next episode, we might have some idea of where it's going, but we're definitely going to have a sense that we're on our way towards the finale.
Right. And it's one of those things where, you know, again, these things can be polarizing in certain fan bases. I don't suppose that this is one of them necessarily, but I go back to Better Call Saul and our great FDH Lounge dignitary, our great friend Mike Villey. That was one where he loved all the stuff that was like Breaking Bad precursor stuff here. And I guess if you're going to be talking about meth creation here, you have to say no pun intended if you're going to talk about precursors. But he loved that stuff, the cartel stuff, all that kind of stuff. The stuff between Jimmy McGill and his brother, or some of the things at this law firm or that law firm or whatever, he was snoozing when that happened. Now, I loved it all. It was like, I love this stuff for what it is. I love this stuff for what it is. On a show like Better Call Saul, it was a thing where it was like people wanted the red meat. There were a lot of people there that kind of loved the red meat. I don't get the sense Justified has the same fan base in the sense of they expected 8 episodes of kick-ass and chases and whatever like that, right? Like, this fan base is willing to ride with it, you think, right?
Yeah, let's be honest. If you go back, everything comes back to the original series. The dentist episode.
Okay.
Where the guy was, like, helping all the people in need in the community and all this. But there was a much bigger nefarious thing. Now, the guy that played the dentist, he was the very skeptical best friend in Ferris Bueller's Day Off.
Alan Rock, right?
Yes. There you go. So,
from Parma, Ohio. Got to say it.
Really? How did I not know that?
He went to Parma High School. So, a rival of Valley Forge.
Well, we won't hold that against him.
Yes.
That episode, when you had already sold me on Justified, and like you just got to get into it.
Yep.
That, I think, is like episode 3, 4, or 5 of season 1.
When they are
still in the exposition phase.
Yes.
And I remember thinking, this is a throwaway episode. I don't need this. However, it built to some other things, right?
Yep.
The episode proved to be important, and that's one of many examples we could give where not every episode is decoy.
Right.
You can't be at 11 every day. Every episode, you can't go up to 11. So, sometimes you have to have episodes. Now, this isn't Supernatural or any of these other shows that run 10 seasons plus at 22 plus where they actually have throwaway episodes. There is no such thing as a throwaway episode Justified. There are just varying degrees of whatever it is, aspect-wise, we're looking for. And there are going to be episodes that aren't as exciting as some of the more exciting ones. But that doesn't mean that they don't have value to the process of telling a story.
That's true. Yeah, everything kind of fits together. And this one kind of fit in there. And like I said, I was speculating at the beginning of what it was going to be like and feel like. And it's one of these things where, interestingly enough, we said at the end of the last episode, because we were at the halfway point, that we felt like there was plenty of runway to tell the rest of the story.
Yeah.
I still absolutely believe that that's the case. Three episodes is a lot, and you know, very possibly the finale might be an overrun. So it might be a little bit of cheating going on there as well. But it's a thing where this was an episode that in terms of it didn't involve the Albanians at all.
Yep.
So that part of it just kind of, you know, sat still for a minute. And as far as any actual kind of developments here, we got to see what was going on with the the victim of the book here, David Cross. I know that you felt and I felt there was a little bit of misdirection as far as how that played out, but we saw him. That might be the only time we see him. I don't know, but it was interesting for what it was worth. I will say, before we get to your characterization of how that played out, this is one of these things where Justified historically, and we've talked about this, has done a lot with stunt casting, whether it be Mike O'Malley or some of the other characters, Mary Steenburgen, having someone on play against type. Having David Cross in there as this smarmy businessman kind of a guy did not feel like stunt casting at all. It felt very much on the nose. I don't say that in a critical way, but it was like, that felt like a David Cross character.
Yeah, I have to at least address this. In the realm of content creation, there's a lot of people saying a lot of declarative things. Mm-hmm. And typically, most of the time, when that doesn't hold up, they just speed right past and get to the next point. I'm not going to do that. I absolutely fell for the head fake. Because when I saw the image in the coming attractions where he's sitting at a conference table, bald head, nicely prepared beard. I'm actually kind of jealous of his beard in this episode. I was almost certain that he was going to be a major player. Like, I thought he would have been, like, a second lieutenant in the Albanian mob or something. Like, I was thinking if Manziel goes to strong-arm him, which I'm sure he did before he walked out with the painting, I was under the impression that he was going to go at the David Cross character, and the David Cross character wasn't going to flinch. Like, the henchman that we saw last episode, but higher ranking. Right. Almost Russian Bratva-type stuff.
Right.
Now, clearly that's not at all the character he's going to be, and that's a little disappointing, because I was kind of hoping we were going to get, like, fully committed David Cross with an Albanian accent or something. but yeah, that didn't happen. It's okay. You know, you lose 100% of the games you don't suit up for, so I'll take that one on the chin, no problem. One last thought, just to drive home this whole point about you know, the difference between what your personal most immediate concern is and the larger thing, especially when we go back to that comment I made about there's a difference between knowing who did it and getting the conviction, right? So a reference that I hope everyone watching this will get, if you don't get it, as soon as you're done watching this video, go watch it. I think it's on HBO or Max that they're calling it. I almost refuse to call it that.
You should.
Just real quick side note. HBO changing its name to Max feels like if you got in a fist fight and then the guy that beat your ass, right, takes on the name of the guy that lost the fight. Because if you're over 30, how do you not hear Max and immediately think Cinemax? Anyway, we're getting off topic.
Well, you know what? It's also like taking one of the most famous penetrating worldwide brands and changing it to an X. Glad we don't know anybody who would do anything like that.
The reference I want to make here that I think everyone will get, do you believe them?
If you walk away from this now, you've sealed their fate.
Their fate was sealed the moment Santiago died.
Do you believe they have a case?
You and Dawson, you both live in the same dream world. It doesn't matter what I believe. It only matters what I can prove.
And that's what I would tell that chief of police is, we know what's going on. We just can't prove it yet. You know, relax. Tell the governor to stow it.
Right.
Another real quick thing I wanted to jump into. Two things are converging, and one's going to lead into the other, which is great. The book. I understand why the book looks like, as they said, our pouch of diamonds or whatever. I understand why Clement and Sweetie are looking at that book like it's their ticket out. However, this is one of those things. You get away with it once, count your blessings, right? Three, four times. This is going to catch up with them. Which brings me to the point, not so much Sweetie, because, he's not really the one driving any of this. But with Clement, in the beginning, he started off as being just sort of a cocky criminal. Mm-hmm. Then you start to see some of that native genius, even though he's not consistent with it. And ultimately, I think what's happening right now, he's getting reckless. Like, there was a point in, like, episode 3 where I thought, oh, this is going to go down to the wire. Like, we're not going to have a resolution to this until the very end, because right. they're going to try to paint him as being kind of a mastermind like Boyd was. I think he's unraveling. Whether we go back to the Albanian and just, like, abolishing the plan altogether,
right.
to now just going, oh, this book is our gold mine, and we're just going to squeeze everybody. Like, yeah. when he went back to get the painting, when he goes back to the David Cross character at night without Sweetie, like, this is the beginning. It feels like the beginning of a slight unraveling, or there will be a compromise of some sort that will put him in a bad spot, which, again, feeds into the whole, I'm not sure Clement Mansell is actually the big bad. But that whole idea segues very nicely into the other person that we care a little bit more about, that we talked at the beginning of the show, with Carolyn.
Mm-hmm.
While Mansell is sort of losing his grip on being in control of everything, we absolutely have to address the final segment of the episode. We have this Jamal character show up again, and quick side note, I actually really thought it was a lovely writing choice that the moment she storms out of the restaurant, Raylan and Jamal just have sort of like a bro moment. The whole like, hey, did you know the best Chinese food in Detroit is actually in Canada? Like, normally a situation like that, she storms off, you expect one of them to chase her, or for them to start getting adversarial. And the fact right. that they didn't go that route, I really love that. Yeah. But after that whole thing, we see Carolyn speed away, and then she shows up at Sweetie's bar, where she gets a little emotional, and then it becomes this whole, like, when is my turn, right? Mm-hmm. And I don't care what we're talking about, real life, not real life, the moment you find yourself within a certain dynamic of your life, and then you start making irrational comments to yourself, thoughts that are like, I deserve this, I am owed this, you are absolutely about to make a horrible mistake.
Yeah.
So in the notes, I mentioned that I don't like that she's looking down the road she's looking down, because technically she hadn't done anything yet. But the fact that she's thinking about it really concerns me from a long-term perspective on her as the judge. If that's her goal, like, how if this whole situation with Jamal is eating her to the point where she paid off a lien that I'm assuming wasn't hers, if that was enough to eat at her to do that, what's going to happen when she's sitting on the bench from less than legal means? If that's the road she's going down, to take these people in the book and to twist them, not for money, but to position her to become the judge and to sit on the bench. If that's what she's doing, I am terribly afraid for what's about to happen. Now, I do want to share another thing. Just, we haven't mentioned this. It never came up before because I wasn't going to do it. But as one does, we're doing Justified content. I'm looking for Justified content. I came across a video last night. I'm going to go find it, and I'm going to credit the creator. And I may even do another little side piece that we'll throw in the mix. Now, while I don't agree with that, and that's why I wasn't going to cover it, was my thought initially before tonight's episode was, if you're watching Justified City Primeval and your number one motivator is not Raylan Givens, first of all, I'm a little confused at why you're here. Right. But second, my immediate pushback was like, no. It's about Raylan. I still think the show is Raylan. Like, you don't have the show without Raylan, right?
No.
But outside of Raylan, once we accept that and move off of Raylan, whatever she does next with this avenue she's entertaining is either going to take her to being a very important character in the series, which she kind of already is. She will be a major focal point, or she will be a catalyst for what happens next. So while I don't necessarily agree that the show is about her, or she should be the reason you're watching, I do think she's a very engaging character. I love what the actress is doing with it. And I do think she's important to the role. The question is, how important does it become? Raylan is 1A and Carolyn's 1B, or is it Raylan's 1, Carolyn's 2? Any number of permutations could come from this. But I do think whatever she does next is going to be wildly impactful for the remaining episodes.
I think it will as well. And until you said that from that review, I guess I never knew that there was such a thing that was possible as secondhand first character syndrome, main character syndrome. Because I would suspect that Carolyn had main character syndrome if she thought that she was the lead character here. And again, the prospect of getting corrupted by greed, as well as the chance to get out from underneath these other things, you know, as far as being under Clement's thumb and whatever debts she's still dealing with from her first husband. I mean, there are a number of things that she's dealt with that have been pretty rough. So you come to this point here, and again, she's going to end up intertwined, you know, even further in these things with the Albanians. They're not going to give up trying to get a hold of her to try and squeeze her on the whole Clement angle. So there's all kinds of different complicating factors here. And again, only 3 episodes to go at this point. And again, I maintain we still have enough runway to go here. If we have another episode that focuses as much on the characters and as much on the quiet nuances as this one did, then I might be saying, wow, well, you know, I'm not going to lose faith in these guys, but 2 episodes, that could be a lot to cram in. But the next episode, I expect to make up for lost ground vis-a-vis action and things that will advance the plot heading into the penultimate and final episodes.
Now, I do have something that I hope is going to blow some people's minds. They've been really good about the penultimate and finale. Yep. Now, I agree with you. I think we're going to get a build-up next episode. But even if we don't, I still have faith that this group of showrunners can still give you that penultimate that punches you in the throat, and then follow it up with the finale that blows your mind a little bit.
Right. And that's where, you know, again, we talked about this, that it felt like once the Albanian mob started to get involved, that was probably going to lead into the second act. And for an episode where the Albanian mob was completely sidelined, in a way, that kind of makes sense. I think by the end of the episode next week, we will be at the point of the end of the second arc and coming into the home stretch here. Now, again, how you resolve all of that, and again, that's what really makes it interesting, is the very, very tiny chance that we actually get resolution on Clement early. I'd say that's a less than 1% chance with the Albanians or somebody else being the focus the rest of the way. When you keep saying, let me draw you out on this, when you keep saying that you think somebody else may become the big bad, are you thinking it's going to come from the Albanians?
I am, yeah.
Okay, all right.
Yeah, I just it's one of these things that what we know of Justified, and we referred to this last week, is we all think, if you use your recollection and you don't think too hard about it, if somebody just has never seen Justified says, so who's the bad guy?
Yeah.
I think most people's reaction is to say, while he may not be a cookie-cutter bad guy, he's more of an anti-hero, that Boyd is the answer to that question. But season after season, you find out that while Boyd is a major player and he is always an obstacle for Raylan, you still had Theo Tonin, Sammy Tonin, you had Markham, you had Max Bennett. So almost every season, there is someone who's a bad guy who definitely is someone Raylan has to deal with, but is not necessarily the big bad. Now, there are a couple seasons where it is Boyd, but it isn't always. So there's this thing in the back of my mind that just keeps saying that while Clement Mansell is a bad guy, and yes, Raylan's got to put him down somehow, there's a part of me that thinks there's a Theotonin aspect that we're going to get introduced to. Now, we may never, it might be just like Theotonin, where the only time we see him is on a phone giving orders to other people. We may mm-hmm. never have a situation where Raylan is squaring off against the Albanian, you know, Don Corleone or something. Mm-hmm. But I do think that the Albanian thing is that somebody else or some other interest within that realm of that Albanian group almost has to get introduced. The question is, does it fall in line with everything else, or is this where the writers are leading us down a path just to kind of pull the rug out later when they want to, which I would be perfectly fine with.
Yeah, I mean, that could go either way. This is one of these things I do think in looking at it that in terms of the situation here, I'm going to go back to what you said before. It was an excellent point that you made, that there is no template to a typical justified season, that there was an ebb and flow with the different seasons and the way that they went, and there wasn't really a strong mirroring of one season to the other based on excessive similarities. And in season 4, which is my second favorite season behind the final season, and that's very close to me, it's very neck and neck, that if you think about it, that was a season that stood out more than almost any other season because there really wasn't a bad guy, a main feature bad guy for much of the season. It was the hunt for Drew Thompson. It was just this whole solving the fugitive case, the D.B. Cooper of Appalachia.
Yeah.
But it was like they didn't get to the bad guy till later in the season.
You know, the one other thing with Manziel that I always want to just keep in the back of my mind, and I encourage everyone that's watching the show to do the same thing. Imagine going back to the first few episodes of the original Justified. If Devil or Johnny were to just show up at the bar and introduce Boyd to this guy, Clement Manziel, to speak to him for 5 minutes or less to see if he might be someone they'd want to bring into the organization, I believe with my whole chest that they don't make it 5 minutes before Boyd, in his polite Appalachian way, suggests that he leave.
Yeah.
And just further illustrating the point of just how different they are, I think Boyd would look at him as just being reckless and chaotic and absolutely not in the vein of the way Boyd operates.
Well, and here's the thing, too, is that in so many ways, on the original Justified series, on the face of it, that it was a little bit of an odd couple pairing and it was so long in coming together because it took until season 3 for Boyd and Wynn Duffy to finally come into each other's orbit. And it felt like an odd couple kind of a thing. You know, Boyd is, again, he's the Peckerwood that has, you know, the shirt button all the way to the top and the niceties and everything like that. But Wynn Duffy's a full-blown dandy. And yeah. Everything like that. So they don't exactly fit the same thing. But here's what it is. I'm going to put my finger on exactly what you're talking about, Jason Jones. And that is, Boyd wouldn't respect him for not being a professional. Boyd and Wynn were both professionals, and they respected that in each other. And neither one of them would respect this guy because he's just too reckless. He's a guy who, again, he's got this crazy mojo. He's making it work. And that's the whole thing. This guy is on the unlikely winning streak of a lifetime, not having been apprehended or killed to this point. And it's a matter of, again, we're just watching how many times this guy can double down at the fictional casino here, so to speak. To go back to that analogy here, it's just a matter of, like, he's on the run of a lifetime just surviving and keeping it going. But we all know it's got to come to an end at some point. And what's that going to look like? And that's why those guys would be terrified to be associated with him.
Last thing that I had before before I toss it to you, and I hope you're not going to disappoint. So much me, but the viewers. Okay. I did want to bring up something. I could not shake for four episodes now. I could not shake the sensation that I know Carolyn from something.
Okay.
And as I was, during the commercial breaks, I was digging through IMDb and I figured out where I know her from. Let's go through some of the important ones. Obviously, Justified, City, Primeval. King Richard. Okay. She was in Lovecraft Country. Oh, she was in The Help. There are two things that jump out at me. Men of Honor.
Navy divers, stand down.
Divers, you will disregard. This is my detail. God damn it, Cookie. Move your ass. I want my 12. 9. The Navy diver is not a fighting man. He is a salvage expert. 10. If it's lost underwater, he finds it. If it's sunk, he brings it up. If it's in the way, he moves it. 11. If he's lucky, he will die young 200 feet beneath the waves, for that is the closest he will ever get to being a hero. Hell, I don't know why anybody'd want to be a Navy diver. Now you report to this line, Cookie.
At ease.
United States Navy proudly reinstates Senior Chief Carl Brashear to full active duty.
I can quit.
The man I married never quit anything a day in his life.
That one I don't expect most people to get. The one we're building to, though, is maybe one of my favorite guilty pleasure movies of all time.
Okay.
This is so absurd when you compare to what we've been watching her in. You are going to... If you don't cackle a little bit, I'm going to feel defeated.
Okay.
It's Undercover Brother. Now, if you've never seen it, please tell me you've seen it.
I actually haven't, believe it or not.
I'm going to find out who's streaming it, and I'm going to tell. I'm going to send you the link.
What I'm about to show you, few people have ever seen before.
Agents report to the ready room.
Welcome to the Brotherhood.
Turn it on.
I see white people.
It's too much! Too much! Caucasian overload! Caucasian overload!
You did good. We need to make sure the process worked. So I called in an expert on white culture.
In season 3 of Friends, what object of Julia's did Ross see on his bedside table?
Her saline solution.
He's ready.
Excuse me, sir. This is a restricted good. God.
Hey, ya, Jeevester. Lance.
Nice pants.
Thank you.
Undercover brother?
Undercover brother? What happened to you?
He had sex with a white girl, that's what.
Oh, was it everything I dreamed of?
It was good.
Yeah. Coffee match the drink?
Good. Excuse me?
No, man, you can't be doing that. No, man. Listen, Jay-Z is doing Lawrence Welk's greatest hits. John Singleton to remake Drive and Miss Daisy. Terry McMillan. Stella got a white man back? Undercover, brother. You're back.
Hi.
Yeah, what's wrong with you bringing a white girl in my house, boy?
Clearly, this is a movie that I have to have you see. Because okay. I think it's one of those, it may not be the kind of movie that you watch every year, but you'll watch it more than once.
Well, here's the thing, too. Like, all you got to do is say Eddie Griffin, and I'm in.
Last thing, did you have anything else?
No, okay. No, that's it. I would just say that I am a man of 1,004 references when it comes to good old Y2J, so I know that popped you here with the whole Walls of Jericho.
There it is.
Yes.
That's what I'm waiting for. When I heard Carolyn say, if they're walls of Jericho, they're about to come tumbling down.
Yeah.
I sucked all the air out of the room. I had a little mini freak out. And then I actually had to go search it to make sure I was right that the walls of Jericho was a finishing move for Chris Jericho.
Yes. Yes. Yes, it is. Along with the Lion Tamer and some other things here.
And with that, we will wrap up episode 5 of Justified City Primeval, where we want to remind you next week's episode is going to be extremely important one way or the other. And then based on that, whatever happens next week means The week after that is must see, and the week after that, you'd be crazy not to catch that. So we will be here the entire time. So we want to welcome you to come back. Check the channels periodically. We're both putting out stuff on a weekly basis. So with that being said, Rick, thanks again for joining me on this journey we're taking. And for you watching at home, we'll catch you next time. You have a wonderful day.